There is a bit of irony. There is a bit of irony in this topic, how to overcome burnout. Don't hold classes for preachers on Saturday morning at 8 a.m. That's the first thing I thought of. But anyway, it's good to see you here. And I think that I have some things that will be helpful to you as we talk about this topic. And it really is a topic that needs to be discussed. Sometimes we suffer alone and we don't open up, and it can sometimes become overwhelming. And Galatians chapter 6 and verse 9 says, do not be weary in well-doing, or do not lose heart, some translations may read, in well-doing, for in due season you'll reap, if you do not faint. And I don't know, I've kind of kept track. The last 14 years I've been at Carnes, and we have, you know, a preacher training school there. And I keep track of the graduates, and you would be surprised at how many, the percentage of those men who dedicate 2 years of their life to come, to give up their jobs, to come and sit and learn, are not preaching anymore. What happens? What has happened? That's disturbing to me, and I know what it's like. I mean, you look in the Bible, 1 Kings chapter 19, where do we find Elijah? He's in a cave, and he's pouting, and he feels like he's the only one, and God addresses that. And here's God's response to this burnout that he was experiencing. He told him, you're not alone. You know, there's this is not unique to me. Other people are going through these. Doesn't it help to know that other people, it's not just you? There's strength in that. And then God said, now I have a mission for you. So there was this reminder that you're not alone, and a recommissioning that God did to Elijah that kind of set him straight and on his path. Now, I'm not suggesting that that's exhaustive, but those are two things that God did in 1 Kings chapter 19. But I'd like for us in this lesson to share a few more things that can help us through burnout. And I am terrible at these, and I get to preaching and I forget. At Carnes, people do it for me. And so I will try to keep up, and if I'm not, just go like this, and I'll hit it. But let's, before we talk about how to handle burnout, can I tell you how not to handle burnout? Because this is what we often see. Sometimes people just quit. They get frustrated and they quit. They get out of ministry. You know, I can tell you example after example. We are running shy in preachers. There's always a shortage of preachers. And I'm amazed at how many preachers I know who have quit preaching. And so that just exasperates the need that we have. But rather than quit, I think hardship and disappointment and discouragement is reason that people sometimes quit. But, and if I can say this in a kind way, it's an immature or short-sighted solution. When I was growing up, I had a friend. We had a nice little neighborhood, and we had all these boys in it, and we all played ball. My backyard was shaped it was a baseball diamond, you know, so we played baseball and football in our backyard. Everybody, and there was one boy who had gear, you know, all kind of stuff, and he would come, and we needed him to make the sides even. And if the least little bit of something happened to discourage him, you know the expression, take your ball and go home? That was literally him. That was that boy. He would take his ball and go home, and we would beg him not to leave. We would do everything we could to, and nope, he's gone, because it just didn't go quite his way. There may be people who are in that category who just don't have the stick-to-itiveness to endure hardship. And one of the things that I tell the guys, if you're in this only when you're treated well and you get patted on the back, and I tell them early on, if it takes that to keep you, don't even start. Just, you know, go home and do something else, because this is not an easy work. But I will say this too, it's not the only job that's difficult. Being a greeter at Walmart's difficult, right? You don't think they go home with headaches of people, dealing with people? Don't act like you're a martyr because people have criticized your sermons or didn't like the way you did. So that happens in every single, you can't run from that. And so quitting really isn't an adequate solution for those kinds of things. I really like what God said about Job in Job 1 and verse 9. You remember the devil wants to get at Job, and God says, Satan says to Job, or to God, will he fear you for nothing? And God said, well, of course he will. You don't know Job. But I like that statement. I make a little adjustment, but I ask the guys in my classes, will you serve God for nothing? Like, will you serve God when you don't get a pat on the back? When you don't get praised for something? When you get, actually, you put your heart and soul into something, do your dead level best, and you're proud of it, and somebody picks at it, finds something that wasn't quite... If that's going to derail you from serving God, you need to make some adjustments to your attitude. It shouldn't be that way. What would we think of Job if after the devil touched his life, Job said, I quit with God. This is not worth it. I'm not following him anymore. We would not be praising him and talking about this man of endurance and a man of patience. He wouldn't be the example that he is to so many of us today. And so when we face hardship, I would just say to begin with, don't quit because it's difficult. Because when you quit, you deny people and you deny God the service that you could render. Many years ago, I was living in West Virginia, but I got a phone call one day and a man said, hey, can you bring some food over to my house? We don't have anything, and my girls are hungry, and I don't know how to even provide. I don't know. And I knew the guy's situation, I knew that they really did. So I went, I don't typically do the shopping, but I went shopping, and you know, I loaded up, I got everything. I was thumping melons and just trying to be, you know, the best shopper. And so I was kind of proud of what I'd done. And I pulled up to this man's house and I walk up on his porch and knock on his door, and he's sitting inside. I can see him through the screen door. He's sitting inside. He has his feet up on the coffee table and he's kicked back. And I said, hey, I got some food for you. And he said, oh, great. Bring it on in. And I said, well, there's 6 bags. And I got no response. So I went back to the car, got 2 bags. And you know how those screen doors have a little hook for a thing? You just kind of do that. Well, he wouldn't even get up off of the couch. He still had his feet up. So I took my pinky from one of the bags, opened it up, turned around, walked in. He said, just put it on around the corner in the kitchen. And I said, okay, but there's still more bags out there. Put it down. I came back around. He's still sitting there. You know, that's kind of bothering me a little bit. So I went back to the car, got the next 2 bags, did the same routine, and I said, there's 2 more bags, if you don't mind. And I put those down, and I come back around, he's still sitting there. Now I'm just, I'm about to be done with it. I go get 2 more bags, bring them up, and this time when I got to the door, he was not there. And as I come around the corner, he had been in the kitchen rummaging through what I had gotten him. And before I could set these 2 bags down, he's walking with me, going like that, looking in the bags, what I got him. And then he said, man, you didn't give me any Coke. Oh, I so much wanted to take all of that right back to the car. And I was so furious. I wanted not to do service because of his attitude. And here's the point that I'm trying to make. If I would have gone back and taken all this stuff with me, there were two little girls that needed, that genuinely needed help, and I would have denied them the help. I can't allow what happens, what other people do, to dissuade me from using my talents for God and my abilities to God. We need to realize that I'm not just serving you. If I were, you would upset me at some point and I wouldn't want to serve you. But I'm serving God primarily. And to allow another person's attitude to keep me from God's service, when you look at that objectively, you say, well, we can't let that happen. And so the first thing I would say is just don't quit. The second thing is don't move. How often do people run into trouble? And I know I've taken heat for saying this before, because I'll have some people that have gone through some really hard situations and they say, how dare you talk about not moving when you don't know my situation and what I've been through. I get it. I understand that. And I'm not saying a blanket thing that there's never a time to move. But I will say this. Sometimes we move when we shouldn't. That sometimes happens. Look at. Don't miss what is said in Acts 14, verses 2 and 3. I want you to see that. Paul was at Iconium, and he said that there were a great multitude of Jews and of Greeks who believed. Sounds like the war's going great. But the unbelieving Jews stirred up Gentiles and poisoned their minds against the brethren. Trouble. There's trouble now. They're at a place where there is trouble. The community is stirred up against the church. And notice the verse 3. Therefore, they called you all. They packed up and moved. No. Therefore, and it's causal. It's not coincidentally, they stayed. But therefore, they stayed there a long time, speaking boldly in the Lord, who was bearing witness to the word of his grace, granting signs and wonders to be done by their hands. Do you see that? They stayed a long time because there was trouble. They weren't fleeing it. Oftentimes, the reasons that a lot of people move are the very reasons they should stay. And we see that in Acts chapter 14. The third thing is, don't withdraw. You get yourself alone, and you're going to find yourself in a worse situation. Sometimes people don't know where to go, don't know who to talk to, especially preachers, because you don't want to take church problems to church members and you know, necessarily and risk that, you know, getting broadcast throughout the congregation. But if you are struggling, the worst thing to do is to get off by yourself and to withdraw and not to have anybody to talk to. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verses 9 through 12, you know the passage. It talks about how that we need to, two are better than one. If one falls in a ditch, the other can pick them up. And, you know, the heat at night, two can stay warm where one couldn't. And sometimes we withdraw and we play right into the hands, and we should know that that doesn't work. When I was in third grade, there were the Ciccarelli brothers. They lived in my hometown. They were twins, and they were mean. And for some reason, one of them came up to me one day and said, I'm going to beat you up after school. I didn't know what he was. I thought, are you talking about me? I was just this polite, sweet little third grader, and he wanted to beat me up. You ask my mother. She'd tell you.
We have talked.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. But So I was like, oh, great. After school, and I had to walk, you know, to school. I didn't catch a bus or anything, just in this little hometown. And you know what I did after school? I walked out of school with all my friends. I told all my friends, here's what this guy said, and those two were gonna get after me. And so all my friends walked with me, and we walked right past them, and we didn't have a fight. I knew as a third grader, when you face trouble, don't get by yourself. But how many people, and we preach this, don't we? Don't withdraw from the assembly. Don't get ripped. You know, when you have trouble, people start missing, and you're just playing into the hands of Satan. And if we preach it, then we need to apply it to ourselves too. When we're having trouble, don't withdraw and feel, you know, broken by it and let that weigh you down. So those are three things before we get to how to handle it. Those are three things that we often do to handle our burnout. But I'm saying avoid them. There are better options than that. Well, let's talk about how to handle burnout. First thing is rest. Can I ask you a question? Why do you think you can do what Jesus couldn't? Jesus needed rest. Read Mark 6 and verse 31. There are countless occasions where Jesus withdrew from the multitudes and went to a quiet place, got in a boat and went to the other side. Wait, there are multitudes of people that Jesus could have ministered to. He could have stayed up all night doing miracles and teaching them, and yet he gets in a boat and he withdraws from them. Why do you think that you can do what Jesus himself couldn't do while he was on earth? Jesus felt the need for solitude, for quiet, for rest. And when I say rest, I didn't say quit. This is temporary. Matthew, my son, says God told Elijah on one occasion when he was depressed, he said he fed him and he went to sleep. And he said, snack and nap. You know, when you're in trouble, snack and nap. And that's probably not, I kind of like that the more and more I, the longer I live. But we do need to rest. We do need to get away, take vacations. If we don't, there's that burnout possibility that we see. Another thing that we need to learn to do is to delegate. Now, I'm terrible at that. I'm kind of a perfectionist in that my desk is just so. Kids will come into my office and they will like turn a pen. My pens are laid on my desk a certain way. Like, and I know if you have touched them. Because, and so people make a game out of coming in my office and turning my cup just a little so that the handle's at the wrong side. I notice that. Everything is just so. And so I take that to ministry and I get so frustrated because people aren't showing enough care. They could do better than that. And I want to take ownership of everything. And I know that's not healthy. And I know that I can wear myself out with that and wear other people out with that. And what you do with that perfectionist attitude, if you don't learn to delegate, you're going to run people off from serving because they're not going to want to serve under you because they never do it right. And you get to a point where you say, hey, if you don't like it, do it yourself. And that's kind of what I was aiming for anyway, right? You know, I wanted to do it myself, but you can't do everything yourself. Acts 6, I always ask this question as a lead-in trick question, but is it ever wrong to do good? You know, that's a question that you want to say, well, of course not. But in Acts 6, the apostles, there was a problem in the church, and the apostles said, we're not going to take care of this. Because it's not right for us to leave what we're doing to go serve tables. Now, serving tables was a good thing, right? But it was not good for the apostles to leave what they were doing to go do that. And so the apostles delegated men seven men full of the Holy Spirit to go take care of this job. And as you see through that delegation, the church grew. I know that there's frustration in not doing some things, and it may not be as good as you would have done it. But when you let people do it, don't they learn? Won't they see and say, you know what, that didn't work so well. I need to improve that. You know, they'll learn. It's the ability to stand back and let things happen. It's not going to wreck the ship. You know, you're not going to sink because of it. But sometimes you have to let things fail and just let it happen. And people learn from those mistakes and you move on. But if you end up taking responsibility for everything in a church, if things won't happen, if you're not pushing and pulling behind it on every detail, that's going to wear you out, and you're going to wear out other people as well. The third thing, how to handle burnout, collaborate. I don't think we're very good at this. For preachers, let me give you some examples of what that may look like. For preachers, how about building a team of researchers that help you in your sermon preparation? What if one of the ministry that, you know, people sit around and say, well, I don't know what to do at church. I don't know, you know, this doesn't fit me, this doesn't. What if you compiled a group of men, women, and said, would you be on this team with me? Could you help research for me? And if you see something in the news that makes that is interesting, something that I may be able to use in a sermon, if you get a good idea, if you're reading your Bible and you come across a passage, it just jumps off the page, will you share that with me and your thoughts about it? And you have a team of people that weekly grind of coming up with ideas and being fresh and illustrations, that can become burdensome over time. But what if you had people helping you? Are you humble enough to say, hey, help me in my venture of preaching? Be partners with me in this. And I know there are people that'll do it. I've done that and had people, and I still have people who will periodically send me, hey, I saw this, I don't know if you saw it or not, but this could make a sermon from this and this. And so that's one thing you can do. Keep being fed fresh ideas without you having to go look for it. It just comes to you.
Steve?
Yes.
Can I brag on you a little bit there?
Sure, absolutely. Come on up.
Thank you for that.
Pardon?
When I think of that word collaborate, I remember when you and Kim and a group with the education together.
Yeah.
All that work.
Yeah, when we were at South Green, we developed a curriculum for the congregation. Everybody was teaching everything different, and there wasn't a cohesive. And Kim and myself and the secretary and there were a host of people that were involved in that all worked together to get that done. So collaborating. Let me say this. If you're an elder, this is rarely done. But again, I don't know why. There's something about that independent and autonomous that somehow gets translated independent and non-cooperative sometimes. And that's not what it should be. As elders, you're sitting down and you got a sticky issue and you're banging your head trying to think what to do, what's wise, and weigh all the options. What's wrong with calling the elders across town at another congregation and saying, can we meet with you guys? And just sit down with them and talk. They're not usurping your authority. You're brainstorming together. Why don't we do that more? If God wants us to have an eldership, because of the knowledge and the angles and the perspectives and all those kind of things that a plurality bring. What's the, are we afraid of letting other people know our struggles? You know, and if that's the case, you know, that's not a good thing either. Trying to hide, don't want anybody to know our flaws. And that would build cooperation among congregations if we would just lower our barriers and treat each other as if we're on the same team and not competitors. But I think elderships could get a lot of help if they would talk to other elders. Jerry Barber said this years ago, but he said, when shepherds shepherd shepherds, shepherds better shepherd the sheep. Do I need to say that again? Yeah. When shepherds shepherd shepherds, shepherds better shepherd the sheep. Did it make sense that time? I think that's a really good statement. Maybe it could have been said a little bit different, but I think it's true. Collaboration, that can help us from being burned out. Here's another thing, set proper goals. Oftentimes I see churches setting goals, and when I see it, you know, we'll go places and I'll see, or somebody will tell me some of the goals that they have for the congregation that year, and I'll kind of cringe. And I'm not sure whether to say something to them or not, just mind my own business. But like, okay, we're gonna set a goal. This year we're gonna baptize 30 people. You're gonna fail. And so everybody goes around failing all the time. You can't set goals that involve other people. You can set goals for yourself. Say, I'm gonna talk to 30 people about Jesus this year. That's on you, but you can't determine whether they'll respond positively to the gospel or not. That is out of your hands. So don't set goals that are out of your hands. Set goals that have to do with what you can do and what you can reach, and then you can reach your goals. But if it depends, here's a good woman and says, this year I wanna convert my husband to the Lord, and he's not converted. And so she's depressed. She's discouraged and despondent because she was unable to meet her goal. Well, it's not her fault. It's his fault because he has a choice. But what if her goal was this? I'm going to try to reach my husband this year. And I'm going to talk to him at the opportunities that I have about Jesus. And I want to live a life that will reflect, you know, 1 Peter chapter 3. And she does those things. Though he doesn't obey the gospel, she has reached her goals. And so that can take away some of the burnout that people experience because they always are failing. Here's another thing. Set boundaries. And that's what we see. Jesus sometimes got away from the crowds. He said enough. This is something that Kim has told me for years, and I struggle with it. But she says, no is not a bad word. And it almost is to me. I have a hard time saying no. And I need to learn how to say no, or I can't right now. But that's hard. But we need to learn how to say those words. You need time to yourself and to your family. And if you're out trying to reach the world and you lose your own family, what have you accomplished? I know a preacher, he was one of my dad, I could mention his name, but I won't. You would recognize it. My dad was his suite mate in college many years ago. He's a very powerful preacher, spent many of his years in Africa. And I went to lunch with him and my dad after a lectureship session one time. And I sat and listened to them talk. And he said, you know, I went to Africa to save the world. And in the process, I lost my kids. And I've never forgotten that statement. I was probably in college when I heard him say that. And what a sad commentary. don't forget your own family. You need to give them time and you need to give them attention. You need to be at their ball games and their band concerts and all those things. And if you're out trying to save the world and you fail your family, you have failed the Lord in the responsibilities that he's given you as a father and a husband. And then let me give you this as well. Remember this truth in 1 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 12, or verse 10. We must all appear before the judgment of Christ, judgment seat of Christ, and give an account for what we have done in our bodies, whether good or bad. Everybody will have to stand before God and answer for themselves. Now, this is what I'm going to say, and think about what I'm going to say. I am responsible to you, but I'm not responsible for you. Does that make sense? Like, I have the obligation to teach you, to encourage you, to try to present you to God at complete and whole in Christ, but I cannot make your decisions for you. You're responsible for your decisions. And I have a responsibility to you, but I cannot be responsible for you. And that part of this is where a lot of people just get depressed. They see people make terrible decisions and you feel like a failure. What does Paul talk about in the Corinthian letter where he says, you build and you build of certain elements, stone, stubble, hay. You may convert people and bring them to Christ, but they may not withstand the fire that comes, the trials that come. That's not necessarily on you. You teach people, you encourage them, you point them to Jesus, and you are fulfilling your responsibility to that person. But you are not responsible for the decisions that they make, and that's not a mark against you if they make the wrong decisions. So those are the things. We've got about 7 minutes left, but those are the things that I would like to bring out. And let me say this too. I know there's also a side of burnout. When I was 30 years old, I had a ton going on in my life. My life was so busy, and there were just a host of things. And I was affected physiologically. I got to where, like, when I was sleeping at night, I couldn't go to sleep. I would lay awake for hours. And then when I did go to sleep, you know how you kind of awaken to consciousness sometimes? My awakening would be, I just turned that off. My awakening would be like that. It would be a jolt. And I had those jolts all night long. And when I would preach, I would come to the back of the auditorium at Carnes, and there were some, Glasgow, and there were some stairs there. And I'd have to sit down on the stairs because I was that exhausted. And when you get in that way, then I was thinking, how am I going to do this? Like, I can't do this forever. And that just added more stress and worry to my life. How am I going to take care of my family? How am I going to? And so I read a book on stress. I didn't know what stress was. I was 30 years old. I didn't know what stress was. But then when I had those symptoms, I realized it. And I read a book, and so every night I would go through these muscle, I would just mentally think of relaxing, and I would do these things, and I took more time off. I wasn't 24/7 on the go, and then the symptoms went away, and I've never had another thing of it. But that can be debilitating. It has nothing to do with your will. It has to do with your body saying too much. And so if you find yourself in that situation with regard to burnout, you need to do something to help yourself physically as opposed to some of the decision things that we've made here. What are your, we got 5 minutes. Do you have any comments, questions, anything to add, experiences?
Steve, Bruce Baxter told me one time, he said, Bob, if you'll take your relationship with God first, your wife second, your children third, your ministry, which is your vocation, fourth, God will make sure you succeed and you're happy in that.
Yeah.
And that's really, really true.
Yeah, priorities are important. Don't get things. Sometimes the urgent crowds out the important. And we've got to be guarded and make sure that everything is. Even my basketball coach said in high school said, God first, family second, basketball third. And so when the first time I had to say, hey, I can't be here for practices on Wednesday night, I was all prepared to quote back to him his, you know, he gave us this handout of rules and all this stuff. And I was prepared to say, you said God first, and now you're going back on it. But he was totally fine with it. He didn't have a problem. So priorities, yeah, they're really important. What else?
I think also this is where eldership can really help. You know, to be in tune with their ministers.
Yeah.
And to know when they're going through that and to help them through that.
Yeah. Elderships can be in tune with their preachers and to help them. We had an elder at Glasgow that, you know, he would come in just unexpected one day. He'd stand at my door and say, shut off your computer, let's go golfing. Okay, you know, I was fine with that. And so we would do that. But yeah, be aware if too much is on them.
One of the things to consider too, when we're talking about goal setting and just being realistic about things, is you have to understand that many situations are going to take time to work itself out. So you're going to have to address it with patience, but you're going to have enough clarity in the situation to realize that a small movement in the right direction is enough.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Anything else about the, yes?
I have a question about your second point on how not to handle burnout about moving.
Yeah.
I never considered Acts 14 verses 2 and 3, and I'll consider that a little bit better, but two verses later, find them fleeing from the same situation. How do you have the wisdom to know that, one, a situation is difficult, but you can still work in it, versus this is now damaging to me and my emotional, physical, mental health, spiritual health, and that of my family? And how do you, you know, how do you justify the two, you know, and wanting to stay and be long-suffering and do a good work versus, you know, realizing that it's ultimately detrimental to you staying in that work?
Yeah, well, again, it's a matter of judgment, and you have to weigh all the scenarios and the impact. When we were living in Glasgow, we had job offers at different places, and one time there was a place that I would not have brought my children into. And I told them, if we didn't have any children, or if they were younger, we would consider it. But I don't want my children impacted by what's going on in this church right now. And so the impact it has on your family, that would be something that I would weigh in all that as well. Of course, Paul was single and wasn't, you know, burdened. Is that, oh, my wife's here. You know what I'm saying. My wife is not a burden. Can I go on record? Is that still running? But you know what? The point that I'm trying to make very poorly. So I don't know. I think you just have to weigh. And if you're trying to escape just for greener grass, you'll know that that's the motive. You have to know your own motives, I guess. Yeah, Neil?
Brother Winkler used to, Linda Winkler, would say something like Matthew 16:26, what's that proper man who gains the whole world and loses his own family, only may give in exchange for his family. And I think it is good, as Richard said, for elders to understand that, for preachers. Preachers need to understand that with elders as well.
Absolutely.
You give them the same encouragement.
Yes, yeah. Well, I appreciate your time, and I hope some of the things that we've said have been, just give you something to think about, and maybe tools to help somebody else.